You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire and educate while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, in November 2010, our guest today wrote an article for her blog about the taunting her first grade daughter Katie received for being a female Star Wars fan. Well, the article went viral and made international headlines, inspiring Star Wars fans around the globe to speak out in defense of her little girl. Now, this experience was the catalyst that launched Carrie Goldman's interest in researching and learning about bullying. Carrie is now the author of the award-winning book Bullied, What Every Parent, Teacher, and Kid Needs to Know About Ending the Cycle of Fear. Carrie blogs regularly for PsychologyToday.com and The Huffington Post. Her parenting expertise has been featured on NPR, MSNBC, CNN Headline News, ABC Radio, CNN.com, and many other media outlets. Now, she travels around the world speaking to companies, schools, and community groups about issues such as bullying prevention, intervention and reconciliation, digital citizenship in an age of cyberbullying, restorative justice, resolving social conflict, and the cultural effects of gender-based marketing. So, Carrie, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan, so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm very happy to have you on here. I have been reading your book, and I do a lot of the reading at the gym, and what I'm finding is that many of the people in the gym that know me now and know that if it's a few days before my show, whatever I'm reading is probably has to do with who my next guest is going to be. And and I've had quite a few people come up and comment about your book. Some have come up and told me stories of themselves. Some have told me stories of their own children. But also some have come up and said, you know, I'm not sure what really is bullying and what isn't. So for starters, why don't you share with us, you know, what bullying is and what it's not?
It's a really good question, because one of the problems with the media today is they throw the word bullying around indiscriminately. And so anything that might be a cruel act is labeled as bullying. But for something to actually be considered bullying, there are three very real characteristics. The first is that the act is repetitive. So it's not your kid being shoved on the playground one time. It's when it's happening every day, or, you know, over and over. The second quality is that it is unwanted. And this is where people like to trip you up by saying, I was just kidding, when they do something cruel. So they make it sound as if, you know, on some level you wanted it because it was fun and it was all jest. But the fact is, if you're not laughing along with it, then the excuse, I'm not kidding, doesn't work, and the bullying is unwanted. And then the third quality is that it takes place in the context of a power imbalance. Sometimes that's easy to define, like if it's a bunch of kids against one, or a bigger kid against a smaller kid. But another way that a power imbalance can occur is if someone has more social power than another person. For example, a kid who has 500 Facebook friends and posts something mean about you is going to have a bigger reach than someone who has 3 Facebook friends. So social power matters too. And when you take all three of those together, repetitive, unwanted and in the context of a power imbalance, then you're looking at scenarios with bullying. And if you have those three, inevitably a fourth characteristic will develop, which is fear. The kid who's being bullied will develop a fear of going to school or a fear of going to baseball practice or a fear of the location where it's happening.
Well, now you mentioned cyberbullying, and that seems to be the new thing, or at least the thing that many of us as parents, never dealt with. So how does cyberbullying differ from in-person bullying that maybe a prior generation would be able to recognize?
It changes everything. And in fact, I've noticed a curious phenomenon. A lot of times I'll see comments on anti-bullying articles from people who say, hey, I was bullied 20 years ago and I just beat the guy back up and it made me stronger. And what I say when I see those types of comments is, your definition of being bullied is not applicable to kids today who are being bullied. Because if you weren't in a digital age, your understanding of the whole idea of being bullied isn't the same. Let's look at, for example, let's say that you're at school and somebody calls you something mean. You're a girl and they refer to you with a rude word. It hurts. And when you think about it, it still hurts. But it's a one-time thing and you only think about it and remember it in your memory. Now picture that you have a Facebook page or a Twitter account, and every single time you log in, there's a new person who's written something bad about you, or you see it there over and over. And there have been studies that show that every time you read something cruel about you, it activates the cortical pain network. So it's like feeling another physical hit over and over again.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because going with your example, there might have been three people, around that girl that heard that comment.
Mm-hmm.
You feel bad. There's three people there. Possibly afterwards, they may either come up and say, wow, that was rude. You shouldn't have had to deal with that. Or if they were, maybe not nice people, that person sure told you or whatever. But I think that's kind of, that's the way that many of us remember it.
Right.
And you bring up a great point. Now if there's 500 people, this is probably not what you want as the topic of their conversation.
And those people all become bystanders who then act as bullies too if they click like on a mean comment or if they retweet it or forward it. And what happens is the kid who now has, hundreds of people making mean comments, and often people can do it anonymously through YouTube or other places. Then they walk into school the next day and they look around and they think, 150 of these people hate me. Who are they? Who are the people clicking like when someone says I'm a slut? Who are these people? And it makes the kids feel just full of panic, a lot of panic attacks, a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression.
Well, and that's a great point when you bring it up that way, because at the same time, you may not understand why people are looking at you differently, why they're talking to you differently, because you don't know what it is that they've read or how they feel about what they've read. And I could see where that could really be difficult, especially for someone in adolescence, which is already a time of transition for them anyway.
It does. It creates so much, anxiety and paranoia. And what's really painful for these kids is that as adults, we've had the experience of living through hard things. By the time you get to be my age, I'm 40, you've gone through something in your life, either breakups or job changes or loss of a child or something, divorces. You've just tested and learned your own resilience. But when you're 12 or 13 and you've only lived this long and this is your first encounter with something negative and it feels like everyone in your world is hating on you, you see where these kids get so overwhelmed and so distraught that they feel like they can't get through it. They have no evidence from living long enough that they'll get through it, and it feels like their whole world is coming down on them.
Now, is there any statistics that shows that this is contributory to the increase in many geographical areas as it relates to suicide?
Well, there's definitely a relationship between self-harming and being bullied. When I was doing interviews for my book and I interviewed many kids and parents and teens, it was actually stunning how many of the kids who were victimized turned to cutting eating disorders and other self-harming behaviors. When you get to talking about the links between suicide, it's a little bit tricky because the kids who actually commit suicide usually have additional things going on. They have conditions like panic disorders or depression, and it's hard to see which is the cause and which is the effect. Did the bullying create the depression? Did the depression create the suicide? It's really hard to tell. There's definitely a correlation, but causality is hard to determine.
Well, now, while we're on that subject, I mean, what are the signs that your child is being bullied at school? I mean, for many of us as parents, are there specific signs that we can look for that may tell us that that's actually what's going on?
Absolutely. And the signs change a little bit based on the age. With the very young children, you'll usually know, because small children, they report. You know, sometimes they over-report, and they'll come and tell you every last injustice that's ever happened to them. As children get a little older, and even as they reach, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, sort of the tween years, they develop more social awareness, and they start to feel ashamed and embarrassed by the fact that they're being bullied. And those are the kids who are less likely to tell their parents. So at that point, what you look for, some of the classic signs are if a kid is having sleep disturbances, if a kid is coming away from using the phone or the computer with, you know, red, watery eyes. The girls I spoke to told me they wore long pants and long sleeve shirts to hide the marks from cutting. So even in the summer, they wore long clothes. Mm-hmm. If a kid is suddenly reluctant to go to school and is complaining of illness again and again, but, you know, no fevers, no clear signs of illness, a huge number of kids turn to avoidance and they try and get out of school altogether to avoid, you know, going to where the bullying is happening. If you see weight changes or eating changes with the girls, especially, boys too are susceptible to eating disorders, but the girls I interviewed specifically had turned to a lot of eating problems. And so you want to kind of check and see if anything's unusual. And then finally, if you notice that your child isn't being included in playdates, doesn't have places to go Friday, Saturday nights, if you kind of look around and realize you see your kid always walking home alone, always alone, not paired up with anyone ever, these are some of the warning signs.
Now, actually, we have a listener question that is coming across right now through instant message, and this one says, when I saw this topic on the site, my heart started pounding. My son has had a terrible time at school because of three bullies in the junior class. He has begged me to homeschool him and skips certain classes to avoid running into them. This is not physical attacks, but verbal ones. When I complained to the principal, I was all but ignored, as two of these young men are important, quote, football team members who deny they are doing this. My son's word against theirs, I am told. Can you give me any advice as to what I can do?
That is such a classic scenario and a great question. And I actually wrote about scenarios like that in my book, where the different adults who you're supposed to trust are complicit in the bullying because of a self-interest. And mm-hmm. in this case, there's the self-interest of the school or the coach of wanting these star athletes not in trouble. The fact is, however, that the law provides that people should be able to go to public school and have a safe environment. And so if her son is not able to go to school and feel that he's in a safe environment, then changes have to be made. What she should first do is start keeping a written record of what's happening. Have her son keep a journal where he simply writes down the name of the people involved, the date, and what was said. When you have several, you know, days or weeks of this record, then you go to the principal and you say, here's my record of what's been going on. And if you don't take action, then, you know, we can take the next step. Everyone answers to someone. If a principal isn't doing it, you go to the superintendent. If they're not doing it, you go to the school board. If they're not doing it, you go to the police. It's simply the law.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good advice. Now, you mentioned the book, and again, for anybody out there, And I'm sure you can get the book most anywhere, but I know that you can get it on the website as well, I believe, which is www.carriegoldmanauthor.com. And that's CarrieGoldmanauthor.com. And for those of you driving, just go to our Answers, the numeral for the family blog website, and we will have all that information out there for you. Now, one of the things that I found in the book that I found very interesting was that it can affect the brain chemistry. So share with us a little bit on how does bullying actually affect the child's brain chemistry?
Okay, so research has shown that several different things happen. Actually, bullying affects the brain chemistry of all the parties involved. A longitudinal study has shown that kids who act as the bullies have a higher rate of depression and antisocial disorders. Kids who are targeted by the bullies have a higher rate of anxiety disorders, a lot of symptoms of post-traumatic stress, and even kids who act as the bystanders have increased anxiety. But the way that it actually changes the brain of the victim is that basically bullying is sustained trauma over time, and as a child is bullied again and again, his brain changes and can no longer perceive threats accurately. So what you have, and I interviewed someone who is in the book, who is now an adult in the workplace, and he was bullied from 6th grade through 12th grade, and it has put him in a permanent state of flight or fight, which is the body's autonomic nervous system being ready to either run from danger or fight danger. And he said that now, in the workplace, if a colleague challenges his work, even in a legitimate way, even just asking a question or a follow-up detail about something, he immediately becomes tongue-tied, panicked, feels attacked, feels threatened. And all of this is an example of how his brain has changed so that he has trouble perceiving social interactions as normal instead of as threatening.
So what you're saying is that, I mean, that by this repeated bullying, it is sort of established a pathway that anything that seems to be similar to that kind of jumps on that one path and takes off rather than creating its own path. Is that?
And so what you see as a result of that is that people who have had a history of being bullied, they have trouble down the road in the workplace, in their relationships. They have a lot of trouble trusting people, and it's not their fault. Their brain has been conditioned to look for, you know, an attack, where sometimes now, as future adults, there is not an attack, but they can't help their reaction. They need therapy and sometimes even medication.
Wow. See, I didn't realize that. What are the things that we can do, if we believe that that it is going on? I mean, similar to, you know, to the client that just wrote in, as parents, when our child tells us, I'm feeling a little bit depressed, or I'm a little uncomfortable with, you know, Johnny at school and stuff. What are some of the things that we can do so that we don't establish these negative pathways?
There are very specific things you can do to help. The first thing is, when your child makes a report to you of bullying, you want to immediately communicate that you're on your child's side. You don't want to say, what did you do? You know, did you do anything to make them mad? Sometimes, particularly with kids who are quirky or who might have issues like ADHD or autism, people blame them for being bullied. They say, well, they acted strange, or they, you know, talked inappropriately. And so you don't want to say to your kid, what did you do? You want to say, I hear you. That sounds really painful. We're in this together. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, everyone feels better if they feel like they have a plan. It gives you back some measure of control. So just like what the woman who had written in should be doing, you need to start taking evidence of it. You know, if there's, in her case, it was verbal bullying, so he really needs to write down exactly what said so that there's some trail of it. Because when you're pressed, like in a principal's office, you get nervous, you get emotional, you're like, you have trouble providing evidence in a calm way of what's happened. If there's physical evidence, like cyberbullying, take a screenshot before you block and delete the bullies. if there's property damage, take a picture of it. You know, add it to this journal of evidence, because nobody can take action without that. In the meantime, there are other things you need to do for your child to help mm-hmm. your child build himself or herself up. The most important thing is to teach kids how to do what is called cognitively reframing the event. So in the event that your child is being told, you know, mean things, maybe kids are calling him a bad name, or, you know, taunting her about her weight or something, the first thing your child has to learn to do is say, this is not what defines me. You know, I know I'm a good person. I don't
right.
deserve this. And then it really helps to have an outlet. Kids who are being bullied respond very well to either taking up a musical instrument or some form of exercise or martial arts or journaling, songwriting, something that gives them a chance to express, because mm-hmm. they're bottling up a lot of angst inside. And in addition to that, you have to figure out what you're going to do to bring resolution to the situation with the kids who are acting like the bullies. And in that case, I have found that punitive measures don't really bring resolution. Threatening and punishing the bullies usually just makes them angry, and
right.
there's fears of retaliation. So I'm a big proponent in my book of what's called restorative justice approaches, and I think that that's a much better relational ecology.
Yeah, and I agree that, you know, if you go and make sure that this child, you know, the one that is being the bully, you know, gets in trouble. You know, in fact, it actually kind of reminds me a little bit of a situation that happened with one of my sons when he was in middle school. And it was so hard for me as a parent not to take over, not to protect. But, you know, he came to me and he told me of a bully that was trying to extort money from him, you know, mm-hmm. for lunch. And as he told me the story, and again, the way my son explained it was, he said that this young child that was considerably larger than him came up mm-hmm. and said, you owe me $5. And he said, no, I don't owe you $5. You know, he says, if you don't give me $5, you know, by the end of the school day, I'm going to catch you out in the, you know, play yard or whatever, and I'm going to beat you up. You
right.
know,
terrifying.
Yeah, and my son is like, well, I don't owe you that money. Why do you need that money? And the guy says, I don't have any money for lunch. I need some money. So mm-hmm. my son reached in his pocket and he had a dollar, and he gave him a dollar. He said, well, I don't have $5, but if you're hungry, here's a dollar. And he gave him a dollar. So the guy says, okay, you owe me $4 now. You bring me $4 tomorrow. And my son walked away. Well, that night, he told me all about it. Well, I was ready to go down with him to the principal. You get this kid over here right now. He's threatening my, you know,
right. Parents want a pound of flesh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And my son goes, Dad, can you please not do that? And I went, well, but Chase, I mean, what am I going to, and he says, Dad, please just let me handle it. And so sure enough, I mean, the next day, well, I still couldn't, I just couldn't. So what I did is I typed up what Chase told me that happened, what my son mm-hmm. told me, and I typed it all up. And for those that don't know out there, I'm a detective by trade. So, you know, I essentially made a report of what happened and put in there what, you know, that my son, you know, did not want me to take this to the principal. And I put a copy of it in his backpack, and I kept a copy for me. And so the next day, you know, the boy comes after it, you know, and says, okay, you know, give me the $4. And he says, you know, I don't have $4 and I don't owe you $4. He says, okay, well, after school, I'm going to beat you up. And after school, this group of kids, and he had a little circle, and they came and they circled my son, and he had some of his friends there as well. And this kid just kept taunting him. And the kid took a swing at my son, and my son dropped him. Well, you know, my son didn't share with him that he'd taken martial arts and could defend himself. And so he put the kid on the ground, and, you know, as the kid's on the ground, he just says, stay there. I don't owe you any money, and I don't want to fight you. Well, at this point, a teacher is running over there, you know, and they grab both of the kids and they take them into the principal's office. And my son reaches back into his backpack and said, "My dad said if this happens, I'm supposed to give you this." And he handed him the letter. The principal called me, had me come down there, and fortunately, in this situation, my son didn't get in trouble. But the concern was, knowing that he could handle himself, was that he would get kicked out of school just for defending himself.
That is a very real concern, and it happens every day. Mm-hmm. Most schools have a zero tolerance for fighting. And so, unfortunately, what happens is we see this a lot. A kid who is being taunted or bullied will finally fight back, and both kids get in trouble. There's not a lot that you can do to prevent that from happening because of school rules, but what you can do is communicate to your child as a parent, "I will never be angry at you if you have to defend yourself." You know, you just say to your kid, if it comes down to this where someone's threatening you with bodily harm and you need to protect yourself, I will understand. Now, not every kid is going to have a parent who's able to, you know, prepare and have a letter and all of that. But that's one of the reasons why it's really good to track as evidence what's been going on leading up to these types of events. What a school can do in the case of kids who are having these types of problems is the schools can take action too. Schools can teach social emotional learning. They can teach bystander activities. The fact that both boys had a group of people showing up with them means that a lot of people knew about this event, and nobody said to the teachers or the school, "Hey, there's a problem," or "Show up at this place at this time after school because I'm afraid there's a problem." And it shows that there's a lot of fear. The kids at this school were afraid to report what was going on, probably because of fear of retaliation. So the best way to get rid of fear of retaliation is to make it so that when someone makes a report of bullying or aggression, instead of the school jumping straight to punishment, the school does other things, meetings with social workers or, you know, restorative ecologies or other types of practices so that the person who's been reported on doesn't feel so much like, "I need to get back at you." Sometimes what it does is it brings much needed help to the person who's acting as the bully. And in that respect, sometimes they realize it was for the best that the situation got reported.
And I can I can certainly understand and can even think of my own situation of where I was really happy that a teacher intervened, prior to anything getting a little too out of hand. We're going to take a break, but I want everybody to stay with us. We're talking with Kerry Goldman. During the break, if you want to open up another screen on your computer, those of you sitting at your computer, again, you can go to www.kerrygoldmanauthor.com, pull up another screen, stay with us. We will be right back with Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We're talking with Kerry Goldman. The book is Bullied: What Every Parent, Teacher, and Kid Needs to Know About Ending the Cycle of Fear. Now, Kerry, one of the things, and we were talking a little bit before the break about some of the kids who really have a concern of reprisal. You know, how are they going to be perceived if they, you know, if they go and they talk to, you know, to the teachers or they talk to the principal? Which actually brings up the other thought is that how do we teach the kids the difference between just tattling and reporting something that is important?
That is a very important issue that starts quite young, actually. We try and tell kids that tattling is when you're really just trying to get someone else in trouble, and reporting is when you're trying to get someone out of trouble. I like to give an example in my book of with the younger kids. If your child sees someone else sneak an extra cookie at snack time and runs to tell the teacher, and the teacher says, "Who are you trying to get out of trouble?" The answer is probably no one. No one's really in danger in that situation. Your child learns, oh, well, maybe I'm just trying to get that kid in trouble. This was unnecessary reporting or tattling. However, let's say that someone sees what happened with your son, and they see someone trying to bully someone over getting their lunch. Well, now there's a couple people in trouble. Your son was in trouble because someone was trying to bully him, but the other kid's in trouble too, because you do want to know, why does he not have money for lunch? What's going on? Is something wrong at home? And in that case, if someone, you know, makes a report of it to a teacher, they're trying to get people out of trouble, not necessarily get people in trouble. So, you know, that's an example I use with the younger kids. With the older kids, an example I used was, let's say that you find out some kids are going to skip school and, you know, go to the home opener of the baseball game. It's spring season. I mean, ideally, kids should be in school. It's not what we want for them, but no one is probably in danger. And if you make a report of that to the school, you wonder, are you really just trying to get someone in trouble? Whereas the other side might be, let's say you hear some kids planning after school to go jump a guy who's on the visiting football team because they heard rumors he was gay. And so in this case, if you're an older kid and you hear this is about to happen, you say, wow, you know, am I trying to get those guys in trouble who are planning to jump the guy? Or am I trying to get the kid who's the target out of trouble? Someone's in danger here, and it's okay to make that report. So I really suggest that parents teach kids to just say, who am I trying to get out of trouble? And if there's no one really who you can say that's the person who's in danger, then don't make the report.
Well, I think that's very well put, and you mentioned in that particular answer about, you know, the football player who may be perceived as gay. And one of the things I liked in your book that, you know, everything is kind of broke up. It's broke up into, you know, into different parts, but also, you know, in different chapters, you really talk a little bit about certain groups that are more at risk to be victimized than others. Tell us a little bit about some of those groups and what we can do to hopefully get past this.
Sure. So yes, anyone can be a target of bullying, but there are certain people at elevated risk. The groups at elevated risk are people who either look different, meaning that they have a different skin color than the other people around them, or different ethnicity, maybe much heavier in weight, or even much thinner. You know, a very skinny, short guy is at risk of being taunted. Anybody who acts differently. So I had mentioned earlier kids who are on the autism spectrum or any of the other hidden disabilities, possibly mm-hmm. kids with ADHD, they're at elevated risk. Anybody who is very public. You might have a kid, interestingly, who's, you know, the star basketball player, but if he misses a key basket in a major game, he might find that he's on the receiving end of a ton of Facebook messages or tweets, you know, bashing him for having missed an important basket. So if you're very public, then you're more at risk. And you'll see that with celebrities today. You know, there's an unbelievable amount of hate out there on the web about anyone who's public, you know, on any side of it. Kids who are any form of gender variant, or kids who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, they're at huge risk for being bullied. It's probably one of the number one groups. And just anyone who's a minority. If you're a minority, then there's stereotypes out there about you, and stereotypes contribute to bullying.
Yeah, sad but true. So I mean, my guess would be that, I mean, one of the things that we should be able to do, I mean, as parents, but also that our school should be able to do is, you know, just to really focus more on at an early age, mm-hmm. teaching them that we are all the same. And right. and I noticed in the book you have some you mentioned some particular programs. Share with us some of the programs that are really doing a good job at starting at an early age to get kids to focus on the fact that we are all the same, and that if we all focus on not only keeping our own good self-esteem but helping to promote others' good self-esteem, that we're all going to do better, and there's going to be less bullying and less conflict in regards to these situations.
Okay, sure. And it's true. I mean, basically, it boils down to the fact that it's much easier to inculcate kindness and respect in a 5-year-old than to undo the wrong thinkings of a 15-year-old. So certainly the earlier, the better. The social-emotional programs are the ones that show the most promise in dealing with bullying. The worst ways to deal with it are through authoritarian style or military style discipline, because mm-hmm. that's all based on fear, and fear contributes to a bullying culture. So when you look at what types of programs you want to implement in your schools, some of the best research-based programs, one is called Bully Busters, another is called Bully Proofing Your School. There's a separate program called Bully Proof. Uh-huh. My daughter's school uses Expect Respect, and they also use what's called Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports. It's called PBIS, and that's a program where you try and basically reward kids for their kindnesses and identify kids who are at risk for dangerous behaviors and provide them additional supports instead of punishments. The OVAIS bullying program, Second Step, Steps to Respect, you know, these are some of the top programs that are out there, and they start very young. I mean, you know, some programs start as young as preschool, but really I believe that any elementary school should have in place bullying prevention programs that involve at least weekly social-emotional lessons. And if you have a public school that is not incorporating into the curriculum regular social-emotional lessons on teaching empathy, teaching respect, you know, teaching kids how to be good citizens, uh-huh. then you need to bring it to the attention of your school, because they're missing out.
And what percentage would you say of the public schools have programs like this, have initiated them?
I'm not sure of the schools. I know that a huge percentage of states do have laws for anti-bullying, and I can look up and get back to you on what percentage of schools. Some states require it by law. The question isn't even so much whether or not the schools have it, though. It's how faithfully they follow it. Any school, and this is a real thing to note, any school can slap an anti-bullying program into place. But mm-hmm. if the teachers and the principals don't live it in the day-to-day interactions in their classroom and don't demonstrate the principles of it as they interact with children and parents, it really means nothing. So, and we saw that there was a couple years ago, Phoebe Prince was a girl who took her own life in a terrible suicide, and it involved all kinds of accusations of cyberbullying and bullying. It's very complicated. One of the things that came out afterwards is that the school did have some anti-bullying measures in place. But the question is, you know, how faithfully did the teachers and the principals, you know, play their own roles within this anti-bullying program? So, you know, just having it is certainly not sufficient. You need to live it.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And again, just to mention in regards to the book, I mean, in Carrie's book, if you go to the back of the book, she has listed all of these different programs and a little bit of information in regards to each program. So if your child's school does not have one, or if you don't know if they have one, then that would suggest that they're at least not providing all of the aspects that it could have, because what seems to make the most sense is that it's something that the teachers are involved in, that the parents are involved in, and everybody is doing their part. And it just seems to me, this just seems like such a no-brainer. This should be in every school. It's essentially just teaching them to respect other people, teaching them to not only have good self-esteem for themselves, but to respect and help each other, you know, build good self-esteem, build good fellowship. So again, if you get the book, take a look in the back of it. Suggest to your school that if they don't already have one of these, that they initiate it and that they do it at the earliest level, whatever the earliest level is for that school. Yes.
I'm thinking of something quite, you know, striking as you speak.
Okay.
And you were saying if you don't know whether your school has a program, check. That alone would be a problem. The fact is that any good anti-bullying program, it is a whole school environment. So it involves communications with parents. It involves mm-hmm. weekly lessons. So if you have no idea whether or not your school does this, that alone should be a sign to you that even if they do have it, they haven't done enough with it. They haven't engaged you as the parent as part of it. Because a lot of bullying lessons start at home. And so, you know, a lot of parents teach their children stereotypes or other entitled behaviors. So if you don't know whether or not your school has a bullying program, then your school isn't doing enough to include the parents.
Thank you. I couldn't agree more. And we have an email question coming over that says, thankfully, there is a movement afoot to expose this problem. I am a family psychologist with several families dealing with being on both sides of the problem. Children being bullied and those with kids creating the problem. We are making headway one-on-one, but it is a slow process. I just purchased your book, and I commend you for the approach and understanding it brings for families. I will be recommending your book to all clients dealing with these issues.
Well, that's really great. One of the things I really love about the approach that the book takes is that it's not a culture of blame. You know, it's not a culture of you're the victim and you brought this on yourself, nor is it a culture of you're the bully, let's, you know, hang you out to dry. The fact is that for bullying to ever really get better, for the cycles of fear to really end, both parties have to look at each other as a human being. So we don't want to label the bully as the bully. And I've seen that happen. There's a fascinating case in my book, actually, of a kindergarten boy who was having behavioral problems and was acting like a bully. And what was beautiful was at his school, the parents decided not to label the kid a bully. They didn't mm-hmm. say, he can't come to our house for play dates. Stay away from that kid. He's bad news. Instead, they said, this is our school. This is our community. Let's all work together to help this kid because it'll help us all. And the parents took turns on the playground looking out and helping. And they kept inviting the boy over and doing play dates with him. And his mom, you know, never left his side. She knew he had behavioral problems, so she was right there trying to help. And instead of the kid being labeled as a bully, he was, you know, labeled as a kid who had some troubles. And he's doing so well, he no longer has an aide with him. He's, you know, the kid is now going into, I think, third grade, and he's doing amazing. So it helps all of us not to label people as either victims or as bullies.
That's a great point. And it sounds like just, you know, maybe this boy was, part of his problem was he was not being included, and this was the only way that he could get attention is to try and exercise his physical, you know, aggression rather than, you know, then now with him being included, he doesn't need to do that. So I think that's a
right.
great,
and that does happen. And the kid
point.
Is big for his age, and you know, and sometimes kids just truly need to be taught. Some of us are born with empathy. You know, some of us are born with just a natural capacity to empathize. But I was just reading or listening to NPR and heard a fascinating study about how they've learned that even with prison inmates who have been put in place for being very antisocial, that if they do tests with them and show them scenes from movies and tell them, I want you to try to empathize with this character and explain what empathy means, they've found that the empathy centers on the brain light up more after the people have been instructed on what empathy is and how to do it. So that means that for those of us who aren't born with a natural level of empathy, instead of writing them off, we can reach a lot of them by trying to literally teach lessons on what empathy is and what respect is and how it works.
I like that too. Now I'm looking up, we've got about 5 minutes, but let's talk a little bit more about cyberbullying and how we as parents can, you know, can do as much as we can to protect our kids against cyberbullying.
This is one of my favorite topics because it's really the most important thing that adults need to educate themselves about because we have the least experience with it from our own childhoods. So there are certain steps. I break it up into two groups in my book, preventative behaviors, ways to prevent cyberbullying, and interventional behaviors, what to do if it's already happening. Under prevention, you want to teach your kids never to impersonate someone else online, never to share their passwords, even with best friends or boyfriends or girlfriends, because when those relationships break up, it can be a dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. You want to teach your kids never to befriend a person who they've never met before and go alone the first time to meet that person. So, you know, if your son has met a girl online and has developed a relationship with her and she suggests they finally meet, the very first time you go meet, bring some friends because you don't know if it's a 50 or 60-year-old pedophile on the other end posing as that young girl. So it's good to just, when you meet someone for the first time, make sure you're not alone. Another step, make sure you're friends with real people so that you're not catfished. Learn to be suspicious. If you receive a message from a friend online and it doesn't sound like the way your friend normally sounds, learn to be suspicious and to check into it. For example, how many of us as adults have received an email from some best friend who's suddenly trapped in, you know, a foreign country and needs us to send money? That's a classic scam that goes around. We've learned to recognize that that is an example of being hacked. Well, kids need to learn that if something doesn't sound right from one of their friends, maybe the account's been hacked, and to be suspicious. So these are all preventative things. It totally changes if your child is now actively being cyberbullied. So if your child's being cyberbullied, first, he or she should print the evidence. Take a screenshot, download, if it's a video on YouTube, before someone can take it down. I just had an experience with this with someone where the victim downloaded the video, and when the user on YouTube found out that people were, you know, coming after him with consequences, he deleted the video from YouTube, but at least the victim still has proof of it now. But after you've taken the screenshot or downloaded it, block and delete that person from your feed. You don't need to subject yourself to further messages from them. Report abuse. Report it to Facebook. Report it to Twitter. Be sure not to engage. One of the biggest mistakes kids make is that they'll be on the receiving end of some hate, and they'll get mad and upset, and they'll lash out themselves. And that changes everything because it's very hard for a school to take any kind of disciplinary action against someone if your child has also been engaging in the hate. The only way to deal with it is to completely disengage and report it, not to try and fight back. And that's hard. Kids are going to want to defend themselves online. You know, it's really hard. Other things kids need to do, they need to get a break from cyberspace for their own mental health. If your kid is being cyberbullied, do not let them sleep with the phone in their room, because even though they don't want to, part of them will get up at 2 in the morning and 3 in the morning looking to see what horrible things are being said about them. So now, in addition to being bullied, they're going to be losing sleep, which weakens their ability to cope with any kind of social problem. So you want to make sure that they have long breaks of time where they get back in the real world and away from the digital world.
Makes good sense. Now, I'm glancing at the time. We've only got about a minute and a half. Share with us, as anybody that listens to this knows, I love success stories. Share with us one of your favorite success stories. And so that people can see that just because something like this happens doesn't mean that it's the end of their world.
Well, I guess one of my favorite stories is the one with my own little girl. So she was being taunted by other kids for being a Star Wars fan, a female Star Wars fan. And as a result, she decided she didn't want to carry her Star Wars water bottle. She was, you know, upset about it, and I wrote about it, and she received an enormous outpouring of support from people, and we talked a lot about why people taunt others, she learned that some of the little boys who were taunting her truly believed that girls weren't allowed to like Star Wars, because when they went into Target or Walmart, they'd see Star Wars stuff in the boys section, and they just believed that meant it was only for boys. So we talked about how sometimes people act out of ignorance, not even so much cruelty, but ignorance. And anyway, she's resumed being a Star Wars fan, and it's been several years, and, you know, she was a stormtrooper for Halloween, and she's very true to who she is and very proud of herself, and I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's fabulous. And there was no ill will with the boys, because the way her school handled it was to re-educate. They held a Proud to Be Me Day, where kids were encouraged to, you know, wear something or bring something that represents who they really are. They taught empathy. It was just a really beautiful response.
Well, if anybody out there works for Disney and you're listening, and I know Disney bought the rights to Star Wars, you now have a little girl that you need to put in your next movie, okay?
We've heard that. We've heard that from some people. Yes, she's a big fan.
So, well, I hope that they hear that, and I hope that they follow through. Carrie, thank you so much. I wish we had more time. So for everybody out there, if you go to CarrieGoldmanAuthor.com, you can get more information about the book Bullied, What Every Parent, Teacher, and Kid Needs to Know About Ending the Cycle of Fear. Carrie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, and for everybody else out there, please be with us again next week for Answers for the Family. And if you want to get any more information, go to our website, answers4thefamilyblog.com. Have a great week. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.